Haremos mujeres y ancianos. La pregunta es, ¿de dónde habrían aparecido 12 millones de hombres? Ahora es obvio que poseen armamento pesado. Esos canallas disparan contra variadas familiares. Es decir, están asesinando a los que no les dieron su apoyo. El resultado sería un país totalmente destruido, donde vivirían algunas personas que les apoyan o que tienen miedo a ser asesinadas. Lo único que podría detener el conflicto es una prohibición del suministro de armamento y del aumento de la cantidad de mercenarios extranjeros. Porque la situación actual es que existen grupos armados compuestos de sirios y otros grupos de extranjeros. Se habla de unos 12.000 de Túnez, cerca de 10.000 de Yemen. A esta gente no le importa la cultura siria, destrozan los monumentos, asesinan a la gente. Los medios de comunicación occidentales y árabes muestran premeditadamente una situación falsa de Siria. Cuando salió un vídeo conmigo, Al Jazeera dijo que hablaba en voz baja y que tenía que hablar más alto. Me obligaron a grabarlo de nuevo, conociendo que la persona está en peligro, que los rebeldes pueden matar a esa persona. Ellos pudieron imaginar que no tengo nada que ver con las acusaciones que se presentan en mi contra. Ellos participan en la venta de sangre.
Era la periodista ucraniana Anhar Koshneva, que pasó 5 meses secuestrada por rebeldes sirios. Esta semana, 3 diputados de la oposición venezolana retiraron su apoyo al candidato presidencial de la derecha, Enrique Capriles. Dijeron que no se prestarían a un plan de desconocimiento de los resultados electorales que propiciarían un clima de inestabilidad y violencia. Los compañeros de la Radio Nacional de Venezuela tienen los detalles.
Si nosotros no queremos que Venezuela se involucre a partir del 14 de abril en una espiral de violencia que concluya con el desbordamiento de las calles y el enfrentamiento de pueblo contra pueblo.
Los diputados de oposición Andrés Avelino, Carlos Vargas y Ricardo Sánchez denunciaron que la denominada Mesa de Unidad adelanta un plan de desconocimiento electoral y la manipulación de una matriz de opinión para generar una escalada de violencia en el país. Aseguraron que no se responsabilizarán por el plan que lidera el Grupo de los Tres, refiriéndose a los partidos Frente Venezuela, Primero Justicia y Un Nuevo Tiempo, con el candidato presidencial Enrique Capriles Radonsky.
Existe un plan para abandonar los espacios de participación democrática, el desconocimiento de las instituciones, a través de la promoción de las huelgas estudiantiles, que por cierto, nosotros sí sabemos de eso, nosotros venimos de la generación del 2007, con muchos de estos periodistas que están aquí nos hemos encontrado, nos tragamos bastante gas, y reivindicamos sobre todo el derecho a la protesta.
Según resaltaron, y citamos, la MUD es un cocollo de poder, aseguraron los parlamentarios. Por ello, detallaron un cronograma de actividades que forman parte de una escalada a favor de intereses particulares y no fines electorales. 2 de enero, la Mesa de la Unidad niega que presentará un candidato electoral. 5 de enero se presenta un candidato de la derecha y luego de forma tardía. 9 de enero el candidato de la derecha acata de manera irregular el fallo del TCJ ante la continuidad administrativa del presidente Hugo Chávez, intento de desconocimiento de la juramentación del presidente de la República, negación del permiso presidencial aprobado de manera unánime. 14 de febrero, huelga ante la Embajada de Cuba, las declaraciones de la vocera estadounidense Roberta Jacobson, entre otros, aseguraron que la inasistencia la postulación del candidato de la derecha ante el Consejo Nacional Electoral también forma parte del desconocimiento electoral.
Asistieron ni siquiera a inscribir la candidatura de Enrique ante el Consejo Nacional Electoral como una señal clara y evidente de las intenciones que se estaban fraguando para el desconocimiento de la institución.
Dejaron claro que no serán responsables por la escalada que adelanta, según anunciaron Enrique Capriles Radonsky. El diputado Ricardo Sánchez expresó:
es por ello que irresponsablemente, escuchando la voz de nuestras conciencias y en procura de un mejor país que cuente para las futuras generaciones, cuando anunciamos al país nuestra decisión irrevocable de retirar el apoyo a la candidatura de Enrique Capriles Radonsky para las elecciones presidenciales del próximo 14 de abril de 2013.
El parlamentario que fuera suplente de la diputada María Corina Machado dejó un comunicado anunciando:
y así lo denunciamos, con suma responsabilidad y en ejercicio pleno de nuestras atribuciones y obligaciones parlamentarias. Al pueblo venezolano y al mundo adelantan un plan de desconocimiento de los resultados de las elecciones presidenciales del próximo 14 de abril del año 2013.
Los opositores cuestionan que los mismos que firmaron un acuerdo ahora rechazan el órgano rector, dejando claro su confianza ante el CNE.
En primer lugar, ratificar nuestro reconocimiento a la legitimidad del Consejo Nacional Electoral.
Gustavo Ortega, RNB Noticias.
Inició el martes en Túnez el Foro Social Mundial con la participación de 127 países y más de 4.000 organizaciones sociales, políticas y alternativas del planeta. El coordinador del informativo Más Voces, Rafael Cuesta, reporta.
A partir de este martes y hasta el sábado se desarrolla el Foro Social Mundial que se celebra en Tunisia, la capital de Túnez. Es el primer encuentro de estas características que se celebra en un país árabe, en la ciudad en la que prendió la llama de la primavera árabe. Será el espacio de encuentro en el que se coordinen acciones entre movimientos civiles y sociales que en los últimos años han tomado gran importancia en sus países, como el tejido colaborativo surgido a partir del movimiento 15M en el Estado español, conocidos internacionalmente como Indignados, Occupy Wall Street en Estados Unidos, los colectivos que han liderado protestas en Grecia y también los que hicieron que millones de personas se echaran a la calle en Libia, Egipto, Túnez, Marruecos o Argelia. Por tanto, más de 4.500 organizaciones sociales de todo el mundo se reúnen a partir de este martes en la edición 2013 del Foro Social Mundial. En este foro se espera la participación de decenas de miles de personas, 2 años después de que Túnez se convirtiera en la capital mundial de la indignación contra sus gobernantes y diera paso a una sucesión de movimientos sociales y políticos en sus países vecinos. A este foro, en esta ocasión, se le está conociendo por el Foro de la Dignidad. En el espacio antiglobalización participarán más de 4.000 organizaciones sociales en la primera ocasión que se produce en un país árabe. Entre las actividades destacan la Asamblea de Mujeres y la Marcha Pro-Palestina prevista para el día en el que se clausurará el próximo sábado.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. A nombre del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez.
Hello there, this is Tom Morello, and you're listening to Free Radio.
And welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz. This is Robert Norris, and coming up next, it's Bathrop Spears Broadsides, the March 28th, 2013 show, a special broadcast, kind of a pre-broadcast broadcast of a video, part two. You can't see the video, but you'll be able to hear the audio of a needle exchange debate discussion, which was taped on Free Radio. No, actually, it was taped on in community television last Saturday. We're going to be playing it here, though, on Free Radio. Stay tuned. That's going to be at 6:30. And there's lots of stuff before that and some stuff after, so don't go away.
Now the Israelis have a nudist camp on Taba, right by Egypt on the Gulf of Aqaba. Bathers sunning on the beach were dangerously within reach of Muslim guards patrolling near the spot. And now it says to cover up in the Koran, but those Hebrews hung it out to get a tan. So for fear of getting heated, the Egyptians just retreated, which provoked this novel thought for a peace plan. Take off your clothes to those you oppose. Be well exposed to your foes and strike a pose. No need to hurl a rock across the fence if your enemy is being real attentive. Strip to the buff, stick out your duff and strut your stuff. The sight of muff will be enough to halt the tough. Forget about an armored probe, you'll get more room if you disrobe. Relations will improve around the globe. Now the colonel of the Egyptian police platoon made this comment as he peered beyond the dune. All these sabras on the Sinai really look a sight to mine eye, though I think we'd better take some action soon. As he turned, he saw the men of his fine crew, field glasses trained on each attractive Jew. So he went and gave the order to redefine the border, 100 yards down farther from the view. Take off your clothes to those you oppose. Be well exposed to your foes and strike a pose. You can unveil a devastating offensive. It's healthier than war and less expensive. Strip to the buff, stick out your duff and strut your stuff. The sight of muff will be enough to halt the tough.
Forget about an armored probe. You'll get more room if you disrobe. Relations will improve around the globe. Now here's the surest way to end a running feud. Simply approach your adversary in the nude. If he or she's approved, they'll think it's lewd and move away. Who knows, they might be in the mood. You win either way. So if you're fighting and you just can't take it, you just might try your luck at standing naked. Before they have another riot, Northern Ireland should try it. The whole world could ease its tensions if we'd only undertake it. I propose this brand new cure for hot disputes. Have the warring parties meet in birthday suits. Imagine how a summit conference might progress. Formalities abandoned as each delegate undressed. No harm in getting back to bare essentials. World leaders must admit it has potential. For uncovered, one can make appeals to what the other side reveals and see they're not so different after all. Take off your clothes to those you oppose. Be well exposed to your foes and strike a pose. No need to hurl a rock across the fence if your enemy is being real attentive. Strip to the buff, stick out your duff and stretch your stuff. The sight of muff will be enough to halt the tough. Forget about an armored probe, you'll get results if you disrobe. Relations can improve around the globe. Oh yes indeed, relations will improve all over the globe.
And that was take off your clothes to those you oppose. Mark Levy. A song he wrote 30 years ago. And those are the days there's still the days in the Middle East when things were real hot. And I kind of like the idea for protests in the United States, although not a nudist myself, but hey, the body is not a shameful thing. Even my chunky, wretched-looking... Well, let's not be negative here. You are tuned to Free Radio, as you may know, 101.3 FM. You can also catch our stream by going to the HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom website, www.huffsantacruz.org. That's where you can find the name of my show, Bathrobe Spears, Broadsides, bunch of back shows, and also a link to the stream. We have a little trouble getting it directly through the freakradio.org website. I'm finding problems when I try to do that. But you can find schedules there. You can find application forms there. You can find information there. And some archives from other shows. My archives are at the HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom website. And they go back pretty far, extensively, in fact. So if you want to listen to a show later, you want to clarify whether, in fact, I called someone ran into a woman at the protest on Tuesday at the city council, a courtyard, where you had somewhere between 200 and, well, somewhere between 100 and 300 people from the Take Back Santa Cruz march from Harvey West. I guess it was, Family Friendly, Families First, not quite sure the exact name of the march. But one of the women came up to me and denounced me for allegedly calling her a needle planter, which I didn't. I haven't called anybody a needle planter. There is a lot of hysteria around needles, considering that they picked up 750 needles, different crews, the Clean Team, Take Back Santa Cruz, private individuals, in the last 3 months, and that's great. I'm glad people are cleaning up the scene and hauling out trash and so forth, but that 750 compares with the needles turned in at Needle Exchange, where people themselves who are using the needles turned them in for other needles, and that the number I got, I gave a number that I wanted to be safe and give a lower number. I was wrong by a factor of two, in the sense that I only gave half the real estimate. The number I proposed was 120,000 per year. Actually, I got an email from the actual Needle Exchange people this afternoon. It's 250,000 per year, according to their records and accounts. And I'm going to be referring to at least their claims as we go through the show. And as I said, at 6:30, there's going to be a special segment I'm going to play, which is really part two of a Needle Exchange community TV show. The first segment I was a part of, the second part of second segment I was not a part of, but they shared it with me, and I'm going to share it with you. The email that I got was from July to December of 2012, according to the Needle Exchange worker. And let me get her name. Her name is Vern. That's her. Veronica, I believe, is her name. There were... Sorry, I'm a little slow reading this computer here. Having a little little trouble getting this. Totals from... According to this, she wrote me, since I only recently began compiling Street Outreach Services stats, that's the name of the volunteer Needle Exchange group, I do not have access to the past few year totals. I've included what data I have from last year, and I can approach another worker called Mick for more information, as he was responsible for stats prior. And they have been reporting, they say, all data they collect to the county on a weekly basis for those who are shrilly claiming that there were not records being made in these. This includes council members Comstock, and I believe Robinson, although, again, I'm relying on my recollection, a foggy and kind of mixed one of a couple of council meetings and possibly a public safety committee meeting. The total from July to December of 2012 of syringes exchanged is 111,774. The annual total, she estimates, at 250,000 syringes. The monthly average between July and December of 2012 was 18,629 syringes. So that's a lot of syringes, and certainly it's alarming to find needles and to announce, even to, and of course, when this one guy who reported he'd been stuck by a needle, that's even more alarming. I'd be freaked out big time. But does that amount to a huge number of needles compared to the number of needles that they actually picked up? Particularly when you consider that groups like the Clean Team are going out every Saturday and looking for needles all over. I mean, they're pouring through the bushes and checking the areas, I'm told. And I'm not saying they shouldn't be. Now, that's hardly needle planting, not at all. That is, of course, a very good public service. I've commended it before. But to claim that because you found 750 and come to City Council rattling them in jars and ranting about how this is a huge public safety emergency, it doesn't amount to, in my view, a public safety emergency. It's a way to inflame and alarm people, but it's not much different. I would suggest the situation has not gotten any worse, really, than a year or 2 years ago. And there's been no stats to show it in any way. So if it wasn't a public safety emergency 1 or 2 years ago, and there's been no real increase, why is it suddenly a public safety emergency now, except that it is being so touted by groups that feed on this kind of concern and that get political power? They elect city council members like Pamela Comstock, Lynn Robinson, and probably others that will be coming up in the 2014 election. They get people appointed to commissions. They get large groups of people to come to city council and demand things they want for their political platform, which is to do with more police activity, a particular Santa Cruz they envisage, which they say is family-friendly, sympathetic to everyone, including homeless people, but crime-hostile and criminal-hostile. But the trouble is, the words illegal camps often appear in the rhetoric of either these groups or their supporters. And even though I hear people with the one out of one side of their mouth, and I think it's not just out of the one side of their mouth in any hypocritical way, but with sincerity, saying they favor safety for homeless people and rights for homeless people. They don't say rights. They say security for homeless people. And that they have no No grudge against the genuinely homeless and our local homeless. It's the out-of-town druggies. And also, you know, they will. Some of them said to me the other day, and I'm going to be playing some of this, I think, if not today, then on Sunday. I got a lot of stuff to get through. I might not make it today. Some of the dialogue and interchange I had with people at the Tuesday afternoon rally, which was quite a huge rally, and it lured in and was schmoozed by council members galore. In fact, they canceled an evening council session in order to do so they could engage in a public discussion with a private group of citizens. And frankly, I think it's always a good thing when that happens in some respects, but the problem I have with this particular dialogue, not just between the city council members and the group of people that was, I was going to say lured by this group, but let's say the group of people who believed in the issues were being raised and marched from Harvey West to the Santa Cruz City Council courtyard at 5 o'clock on Tuesday, day before yesterday, is that the premises on which all this is happening, the basic assumptions that everyone is agreeing to, that they're talking about, it, you know, and in a friendly way, and in a persuasive way, and in an angry way, are simply false. There's no public safety emergency. And so it's like, what are we going to do about the public safety emergency? What can we do? I mean, we care about the homeless. We have a public safety. Do we have a public safety emergency any more than a year ago or 2 years ago? And I say, not as far as I can see or not as far as I know. Yeah, there are people being shot. There are people being assaulted. There are people who are suffering from overdoses. There are people who are poor, people who are being harassed by the police. Is it more than a year or two ago? Probably in that regard, because it's been my observation and that of people that I've spoken to that there has been a crackdown on homeless people in spite of the supposed good intentions of groups like Take Back Santa Cruz, which doesn't support ending the sleeping ban. So you might say from the very get-go, they stand with the city council's torture is our middle name policy, because sleep deprivation, in my view, is torture. To tell someone they can't sleep at night legally just somewhere, I mean, you might say you can't go here and you can't go there and you can't go here, and that's fine. Or maybe it's not, but it's, you know, it's certainly not a different thing to by restricting, as distinguished from banning sleep at night. It makes homelessness a crime. And since it is a crime in Santa Cruz, and I continue to bring that out, those who are going into discussions of people as criminals and then bring that up and say, well, these are illegal campers, they're criminals. You have to look out for them. Those illegal camps, they're attacking homeless people. And there seems to me it's prompted a real rise in the attacks on homeless people by official, well-armed sources that steal their property, confiscate it, often destroy it, and leave people in the kind of condition that these people in houses who are talking about their security problems would really find a public safety hazard if it happened to them. That's what's so ironic about all this. So I'm going to do a little playing of some interviews that I've done, and in a regular fashion, I go to the Red Church every Monday. I do that weekly, and the voices that I hear there don't get out on KION. They don't get out on KSCO. They don't hit the Sentinel. They don't get heard except very briefly and very occasionally, and they're ignored at City Council. They get played here, and they get played on a few of the other free radio shows. They're the voices you need to hear. If you want to hear or read what Take Back Santa Cruz and what people who are big sympathizers of it, or little sympathizers, or even people who are sort of housed people who have some thoughts about it, well, you'll be able to hear their voices here, too, particularly if these folks are listening and want to call in and talk. They're welcome to do that. But the focus of my show has to do with the voices of people who don't get heard. I didn't see a hell of a lot of homeless people at this Take Back Santa Cruz orchestrated event, which was enabled by the Santa Cruz City Council. If you want to talk about enabling groups with bad agendas, that's something you can talk about. Enabling possible criminals, and I don't say Take Back Santa Cruz is criminal, but people who criminalize homeless people and prompt that kind of atmosphere, in my mind, that's a criminal conspiracy, or at least it's a movement toward criminalizing a class of people, which will prompt violence against that group, which will prompt increased official repression against that group. And that's a crime, as far as I'm concerned, a real crime. And so I would call that kind of a group criminal activity. It's not criminal activity that's going to be prosecuted in any court. It's not criminal activity that will be recognized as a crime by any law enforcement agency, particularly since they're doing it. But it is a crime. It's a human rights crime. It's a human rights violation. And it may not be against the law that the city council makes up or that the state makes up, but it's against a far more basic law that having to do with the basic rights we all should respect and demand respect for. So, let me play a little, and you can call in a little. Call-in number here is, for those who want to call in, 427-3772, 427-3772. That's 427-FRSC for the literally minded. Free Radio Santa Cruz is, of course, the name of the station, and it's 427-FRSC. Give a call in, we'll talk, and again, shortly I'm going to play this, the audio of the TV show, Positive Effects or Positive Side of Needle Exchange. Here we go.
March 25th, 2013. Folks are lounging about on the green. Kind of a cool day. Getting frostier. Howdy. It's around 6 o'clock, and we're talking with Zach and his pooch. Starbuck. Now, you say that not a lot has happened in the last week that's police-wise, but you say you are annoyed about a certain group?
Yeah, the Take Back Santa Cruz people, you know? Like, everybody's trying to fucking exist, you know? And they're trying to fucking kick all of the homeless people out, you know? And regardless of whether you like it or not, homeless people are a part of every city. Like, it's a part of every city. There are going to be people that are out of their luck. You know, and there's a lot of people like me who travel, you know, who just go from town to town, and we get a lot of flack for nothing. And, like, the whole Take Back Santa Cruz movement is just, it's just a bunch of fucking bullpucky, you know? It's just a bunch of crap. It's a bunch of people that just don't like homeless people and decide to take it out on them. You know, a friend of mine actually, this isn't about the Occupy, or not Occupy, but the Take Back Santa Cruz people, but it's about something that's happened in the last week.
We're switching to slow speed. Go ahead.
About the, like, last week, a buddy of mine, he was St. Well, actually, St. Patty's Day. He ended up getting drunk, you know, with St. Patty's Day. Everybody gets drunk, and that's fine. And when he sobered up, he got attacked. He got attacked by four people. One was a skateboard and a knife, and he got really, really hurt. He got the tip of his finger cut off. But yeah.
What was his name?
His name is Sam I Am. He's a local around here. He's been here forever.
And you attribute this to something connected with the latest upsurge of hatred against
yes.
the homeless?
Yes, yes, yes. It was a homeless hate crime because all they took was his hat. And, you know, he doesn't have anything anyways. All they took was his hat as a fucking trophy. And that's bullshit, man. That's just, it's like, you're gonna, like...
Did you talk with him? Or?
Yes, I've talked with him since. Like,
did this happen?
St. Patty's Day. I think it was the day after St. Patty's Day in the morning. Like, in the early morning was when it happened.
Where did it happen?
It happened a couple streets off Pacific. What was the street name? It was down by, like... down by, like, Motive. Like, it was, like, a street over from Motive, which is, like, right here, actually. So...
Near the Red Church?
Yes, near the Red Church.
And, did he say that he heard anything from these folks when they...
No, he didn't hear anything. They just asked him if they could have his hat. And they said, he said, no, you can't take my hat. you know, because this patchwork is really unique, and they took it, and they beat him up and took it. Like, he got a fractured spine, he got from being hit in the head, or hit in the back of the back with a skateboard, and then he got a concussion.
Salents, white, black, Hispanic?
They're Hispanic, Mexican, and one of them had a skateboard and, like, a weird limp, I guess. So we're all on the watch for that's the one that he best described. And that was the one with the knife and the skateboard. And
you think, but did he didn't have any conversation with him, Mike Brown?
No, just give me your hat. No, and then they pull a knife and have.
You think they were connected with Take Back Santa Cruz, or he doesn't?
Well, we don't know, but it's just homeless bashing in general, man. That's like people hate us for no good reason. We're here to.
I want your hat right now.
Yeah, you can't have it.
Oh, darn.
I bet you did, but
he has a hat on, folks. Keep that in mind.
But yeah, it's just it's ridiculous. It's just homeless bashing. Like they're beating up on him for, and they take his hat as a trophy because they beat the shit out of somebody who has nothing, and they took something from him. That's disgusting. That is so disgusting. I don't know. It just makes you really agitated.
You're pissed.
I'm very, very pissed.
And we've been talking with
Zach.
Thanks, Zach. We have a street report. Your name, sir?
My name is Jethro.
And what do you got for us?
Before we hear Jethro's report, you know, I don't think there's any evidence that anybody connected with any organization, Huff, Take Back Santa Cruz, City Council, I don't know, any gang, whatever, did this. We haven't got any evidence of this. But it is, and I also want to point out that Annalisa Cube, who is one of the co-founders of Take Back Santa Cruz, saw her at the rally. A nice enough woman, and I don't know her personally. We've had our differences of opinion, sometimes heated, sometimes not so much friendly. I wouldn't say we're friends, but, you know, we acknowledge each other, not with hostility when we see each other. I don't know if that's hypocrisy or not on our mutual parts or not, but she has stated, and in news briefs, if you go online, there's a lot of news coverage of this event that happened day before yesterday at City Hall, that they're concerned at Take Back Santa Cruz with security of the entire community, housed and homeless. And they have got nothing against homeless people. You know, that's the statement that's made. The problem, as I said before, is that earlier activity by Take Back Santa Cruz in the last few years, positive loiter-ins, pressing the gas stations on Ocean Street to get rid of their pay phones, or at least one of them, down near Denny's, supposedly against drug dealer enabling. I'm not saying that this is an intentional strategy to go after homeless people, though the more recent attacks on the homeless lack of services center, as I call the homeless services center, that's what they call themselves, it has direct impacts on the entire homeless community. It doesn't make them more secure and more safe. It makes it more difficult for them to be alive, and it makes people more suspicious of them as these potential criminals all over. They're criminals near you. Your children aren't safe, and so forth. And, you know, if there were really was such a horrible conspiracy where children are actually being assaulted or in some, you know, facing a lack of safety, I would hope I would be more concerned. But, you know, that to me has not been shown to be the case at all. It is being asserted, and what's being used to assert it is this the great shadow of the needle. The threat and the menace of the needle, the 750 out of 250,000 needles found. And in order to deal with this problem, of course, they are cutting off needle exchange. Oh, no, we're not. We don't want it in our residential neighborhoods. Well, right now, as a consequence of Clean Team and Take Back Santa Cruz agitation, the needle exchange in the Barson Street area was closed down for no good reason other than the anger and fear of some residents in that area who had no evidence that there was any increase in crime during the period of time of the needle exchange. As a consequence, less needles have been turned in the last month. And that's another figure that I have here, which came up. in this email, if I can find the darn thing. Let's see if it's here. I actually received several emails this afternoon. I want to thank Needle Exchange folks for finally getting back to me. It's taken a while. And let's see here. Yeah, I'm having trouble with my computer. What I'm going to do now, I hope successfully, is to play the audio that I propose to play. And this is an audio of a show that was taped last Saturday and that will be played fairly soon, a number of times, on community TV. Let's see if we can actually do that. And let's see if we have the proper cord here. We're okay with this. Let's give it a try. Sandra Lee presents an association with Pagister Productions, The Positives of Needle Exchange.
I'm Steve Plaich, and I'll be your host for today's second segment on our two-part series
Steve
about
Plaich.
Needle Exchange in Santa Cruz and Santa Cruz County. As you recall, our first show, we talked about the politics of Needle Exchange in Santa Cruz and Santa Cruz County and how it had been challenged by and affected by some of the special interest groups in town that had gone to city council and put pressure on council to take a harder look at what really had been a very efficient and very professionally run Needle Exchange for many, many, many years. Today we're going to be talking about the positive aspects of Needle Exchange, the things that it really does to serve not only our city in terms of purpose and something that we need to have, but also on a public health basis, and extremely important for us to understand that and be able to discuss it. I'm really happy to have with me some folks who are not only passionate about their work, but very knowledgeable and experienced about Needle Exchange generally. Welcome Veronica Sims. Veronica, welcome. Jack Bishop. Jack, how are you? And, of course, Emily Auger, who joined us for our first show. Veronica is with the Santa Cruz Syringe Access Program. And Veronica, just give us some background about your experience and engagement with the program.
Sure. I started working at the Drop-In Center in 2006 and have been involved in the program here for about the past 7 years or so.
Yeah, it's good work. And Jack, give us a little of your background. I know that you're an Occupy activist. You and I were in the Occupy together. In fact, you were the head of our Occupy medical working group that did so much great work down in the San Lorenzo Park occupation, particularly with the population down there. But give us just a little bit of background about your experience with Needle Exchange.
Thanks, Steve. I think the work with Occupy was really rewarding for me. It gave me a chance to bring medical skills to a group of people where no public medicine was available to people. So, and there was a large encampment area, and people down there were not practicing harm reduction.
Right.
And so this gave us a chance to educate people and hopefully to counsel people and handle any medical emergencies as they came up.
And we'll be talking about some more of that as we go along, but that tremendous work being done down there. Emily, welcome back. Emily, you were with us for our first show on the politics, and now give us an opportunity to talk about some of the, as I say, positive aspects, positive contributions that Needle Exchange makes to the community. You're the spokesperson for the Santa Cruz Syringe Access Program, and you've been involved with the negotiations and the ongoing discussions with the City Council, and just recently was before the Board of Supervisors on Tuesday. What's kind of the status of those negotiations or discussions between the exchange and council and or the Board of Supervisors?
Well, taking a look at the positives.
Yeah.
One thing that I'm really looking forward to and I'm excited about is the city council is forming a citizens public safety task force.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm extremely hopeful that if we can get, you know, a relatively small group of people in a room together to really be focused on problem solving,
right,
and speaking directly to each other instead of, I think sometimes certain pieces of information can be lost more easily when you're presenting to a group of people who are just taking it in and then the media response. It's important. That whole process is important, but in terms of actually getting down to problem solving, I'm hopeful that the Citizens Task Force is going to be really good with that, and I'm encouraged
as well about that. I haven't put in an application for the Citizens Task Force myself. I have a long-standing relationship with the mayor, and it's a direct appointment by the mayor. So we're hoping that in her discretion and her wisdom, she will, you know, create a group that really can inform the council and inform, you know, our city about what our best practices are going to be, how we're going to move forward as a positive, efficient, professional exchange. And the more people that I think are appointed to that task force that have some sensitivity for that, that have some real understanding for it, I think the better we'll be. But let's talk about the positives, as I said, about New Exchange. Where are we now, Veronica? I mean, today, as we're in Santa Cruz, in Santa Cruz County, how many exchange sites are we doing? Where are we doing them? You know, what is the level of your service right now, today?
We're pretty much providing the same services. We've just relocated to Emmeline. So it's just a little further away, so it's harder for a lot of our participants to access. So we're seeing fewer numbers than we were when we were based in the beach flats. Right. So that's had some impact.
And you're still doing, of course, the HIV and HCV testing.
Referrals, and, everything
referrals
we were providing
and that
before.
Kind of thing. And,
exactly.
And also during the Narcan program, which we will talk about here in a few minutes. Jack, again, you've been around town for quite some time as an activist and have seen the Needle Exchange do some very, very good work. You know, do you have anything more to add about where we are right now?
I think the program itself is invaluable to the people. First, you have to the first tenet of harm reduction is acceptance that there is going to be needle use,
right,
and there are going to be overdoses.
Mm-hmm.
The question then comes, well, where do people, general people, addicts, get knowledge, because the needle exchange is not going to be in the Poganips, in somebody's tent when they OD. So where do people get that knowledge from? And the obvious answer and the immediate answer is the needle exchange. It comes to mind. You can ask anybody on the sidewalk, where do I go to find out about this or information about this? And they'll tell you, call the needle exchange. So I would like to see more support for the needle exchange here in town.
And it's interesting that you say that, because that is the educational component of it is often unrecognized. People think, well, there's needle exchange, we're just exchanging, you know, contaminated needles for clean needles, you know, maybe you're getting some supplies, you're getting this, but you are have an opportunity to learn, you know, and to be educated about that kind of, that aspect of a public health issue that should be important to everyone. And I think that that's something that that oftentimes really goes unnoticed about the positive aspects of needle exchange. I know, Emily, you've been involved in this both in Watsonville and in Santa Cruz for a long time, and you have really concentrated a lot of your efforts on education, you know, and being able to do that, being able to get the information out.
Yeah, I mean, every single time we do a syringe exchange with somebody, we have to do some form of a risk assessment just to figure out what type of syringes people need, what type of supplies, how many. And in asking those questions of people, it opens doors to a whole lot of other issues that a person might be facing if they have a specific HIV risk, if somebody uses with a partner who has Hep C, but they themselves don't have it yet. There's particular risk issues and a lot of conversations about not sharing cottons and cookers, talking about blood-to-blood transmission, talking about testing. Mm-hmm. You know, just the basic questions that we use to figure out what a person needs. Mm-hmm.
And I know that from my experience with during outreach with the exchange, there was a time when we actually had HPHP, Homeless Persons Health Project, nurses on site, to deal with some of the problems that the intravenous drug use community was having, and that in turn lowers all of our costs, medical costs, for not only the city but the county. So we're providing that, you know, kind of a positive contribution to the community. One of the things that struck me while I was still doing a lot of outreach, and I think we mentioned this on the first program, that during my 2012 run for city council, I kind of stepped away from it so I could go out in the community more and concentrate more on my campaign, but still I was in touch with the folks. One of the experiences that I remember most vividly about being with Needle Exchange is the Narcan program. It's a drug overdose program, and how on site you would have a full training and the drugs would be fully registered and accounted for and those kinds of things. I know, Veronica, you've been involved with that as well. Give us, you know, a kind of an overview in your mind from the Narcan program.
You know, I haven't been as involved for as long as Emily had. I think I'm going to leave that to her. She could probably speak to it a little more.
Emily, please, then. Absolutely.
Basically, our Narcan program, we overdose is an issue that a lot of people will talk to us about because it's a terrifying experience. It's horrific to witness. It's very traumatic to lose somebody to it or to go through it oneself. So when people come to us and talk about their experiences, the best way that we can respond, we found, is to actually kind of formally train people on how to use Narcan, and they get a prescription for Narcan, which is the antidote to an opiate overdose. Mm-hmm. It's the medication that paramedics use. It's the same medication doctors use in the ER if someone is delivered there with an opiate overdose. What we do, we kind of process first with a participant, find out what their experiences have been, if they've witnessed an overdose before or more than one, what went right, what went wrong, what was the outcome, what did it feel like, what was confusing, what was frightening about it, what was surprising, you know, get a sense from that individual what their experience really was, and from there we move to the specifics about how do you recognize an opiate overdose. Like if you can't visually see that a person is breathing, you want to get closer. You want to, if you still can't tell, you want to shout, yell, see if they'll respond. After that, you would need to actually try to shake them. You know, this is how the training works, getting into that level of detail with people. How do you recognize what's going on, and then what are the steps you can take to actually save that person's life if they have stopped breathing? And that includes teaching people how to do rescue breathing, teaching people how to administer Narcan, teaching people how to manage a 911 call, teaching people how to manage the scene. One of the things that people talk about the most is even if you know how to recognize an overdose, even if you've got Narcan and technically know how to administer it, the stress and the chaos of being in the midst of an overdose situation can create such emotional panic that those facts and those skills can kind of fall away. So what we really try to do is process through with people, think about things in advance at a really detailed level so that if they're in that situation again, hopefully the information will kick in and they'll remember, if there's if there's this situation, I remember I need to do this, I need to do A, B, or C.
And I want to go back to that in a little more detail, but I'd like Jack to relate with his experiences with the Occupy. As you recall, last year we had a large encampment, San Lorenzo Park. We did have a medical working group through Occupy, and Jack, you were the head of that and really were the primary person that delivered kind of medical help and medical information to that entire group of folks. Mm-hmm. What was your experience with the needle use and perhaps I think we had an instance or two of overdose down there that you were directly involved with?
I think that there were three overdoses during that period of time while I was involved. My experience with the needle exchange and the Narcan training was spectacular. It was really top notch. I was trained 20 years ago as an EMT, and so for me it was a brush up of knowledge that I already had. The needle exchange asked me to bring a few people. Mm-hmm. It was quite a large encampment, so I brought, I think there were five people that I brought.
Yeah, we at one time had about 150 folks down there, so it was a pretty...
So the needle exchange was really, really confident, as Emily outlined. The actual experience of an overdose is personal and it's direct. Mm-hmm. And all the knowledge in the world doesn't do you any good unless you can remain calm and manage the scene. And so they were kind, they were gentle in the way that they educated mm-hmm. the people, because the people I chose had some basic first aid knowledge, but they're not on the level of a first responder. Mm-hmm. And I think the needle exchange and the Narcan program did a wonderful job of educating mm-hmm. and confidence building. Yeah. So
and I'll relate an anecdote that you told me that occurred during that time is there was an overdose in the encampment and the police had come, but they deferred to you because you had the training and you had the experience, and they stepped back and said, you know what you're doing. And that is such a great illustration of how important this kind of a training is and how much of a public service it confers upon the community, and particularly in this particular time. I remember mm-hmm. very vividly, you know, you telling me that story.
I think and I'm glad that they did. I'm glad that the first responder, the police department, stepped back and recognized that I had skills mm-hmm. and allowed me to use them. The needle exchange and the Narcan program are the first responders of a community of people that use drugs. Mm-hmm. That's the first place they go to, you know, and that's the first opportunity, maybe for the first time, that they get education mm-hmm. of outreach things. Women might come, and there would be a domestic violence situation. And if it's one-on-one with a woman in the van speaking to another woman, she's going to talk to that. To that person. And so if that program isn't active and isn't working and isn't present right. in the community, where do people go?
Right. And there's another aspect to that, and this really has to do with legislation and being able to lobby our representatives to make it more possible for people to actually perform this kind of a rescue service, and that there was some concern amongst people who were helping people who were overdosing that they would have criminal culpability for being involved mm-hmm. in that. And maybe, Veronica, you could speak to that a little bit, or Emily, either one.
There was a Good Samaritan law that came into play, I think it was January of this year, mm-hmm. where if you call 911 and for a friend who's or whoever who's experiencing an overdose, you're not held accountable if you're possessing or whatever.
And the idea is just to encourage people to actually make that call, mm-hmm. not to hesitate, because it's a terrible choice that a lot of people end up making with really horrific outcomes sometimes, either a person dying because the call wasn't made or a person going to jail. Absolutely. Yeah. When you're talking about a human being mm-hmm. not breathing, right. you don't have very much time before mm-hmm. brain damage and death.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the Good Samaritan Law is a fantastic thing, and we really hope to get the word out about that.
That's
to
great.
Let people know that there is this layer of protection,
and
you should never hesitate to call 911.
And I do know that, in a broader sense, Street Outreach Supporters and Santa Cruz Syringe Access Program have at least relatively regular trainings for people who can be on site, and actually they can in turn train people to do that. And I don't know whether you've had one recently. I know that there have been those trainings. The Narcan trainings, yeah.
Yeah, most of the... I mean, we have a relatively small group of volunteers, but all of our site supervisors are trained.
Oh, yeah.
And there's always at least one of us at a site, which means that when the drop-in center was open, we used to have people would carry their friends off the levee and drag them into the center, bring them to the center if they were overdosing because they were concerned about calling 911 or didn't have a phone or just weren't sure what to do.
And kind of this level of education and this level really of detail in a program that is so essential, in the community on a public health basis, is really what's admirable, I think, about what the Street Outreach Supporters and what Santa Cruz Syringe Access Program has done and continues to do. And I think the impression has been given that, well, there's some inefficiency, there's a haphazard, and it's anything but. I can tell you from experience, and I mentioned this during the first show, that being on site and watching the site supervisor providing this training to people, where they sit down and they're one-to-one with them and they're giving all this information, and all the drugs that they give them are written down and they're registered and coded, anonymously, of course, but they're coded. It is such an efficient and professional program and approach, and I think that's the kind of thing that people should understand, regardless of whether you support needle exchange or not, regardless of whether you support Narcan or not, and I can't see how you could not possibly support saving someone's life. Nevertheless, the idea that it is somehow haphazardly done, not professionally done, is a myth that should be completely busted.
Right.
And I think that's what we're talking about here.
Yeah. And I think another really important thing to point out is, yes, we provide these trainings to our participants, but it's our participants who do the work ultimately. And since we've been doing this program a year and a half or so, over 30 people have come back and told us that they...
Yeah.
And what that is, that's an injection drug user saving the life of another injection drug user.
Right.
And sometimes when you talk about the stereotype of a junkie, often there's an idea that injection drug users are kind of lacking in moral fiber, not... very, very selfish.
Presumption that is made.
Yes, and there's... this is just a shining example of, injection drug users are human beings who care about one another, and when they have the skills to save each other, they do.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what we want. We want people to survive the period in their lives when they are addicted and hopefully make whatever changes they can to improve their lives,
right.
And everything that we do is toward that end.
Jack?
Yeah, I'd just like to add that the drug culture in Santa Cruz, in the country, it's a subculture, and then there's the rest of society. The needle exchange acts as a bridge between the two. All right, and that subculture, the people in that subculture, for whatever reason, if they're trying to get out of that way of life, if there's not a welcoming hand to help them up, then they're doomed to fail.
Yeah,
and we just can't throw people away like that. It's just not.
And it's something that I won't speak to personally, but my impression was that Street Outreach Supporters and Santa Cruz Syringe Access Program was at least contemplating some way to give people who wanted to rehabilitate some opportunity to do so, some small scholarship or some small program that they could push them in the right direction, or at least give them some information about that.
I mean, most chronic injection drug users... go through periods of time when they really desperately would like to stop using drugs and get clean. We get questions a lot about, do you talk to people about treatment? Do you pass out literature about treatment?
Right.
We don't set that agenda for our participants.
No, of course not.
But we don't need to. People mm-hmm. come and talk to us about their concerns, about the things mm-hmm. that are difficult in their lives. Right. And unfortunately, it's very, very hard to get into treatment, both because making arrangements in your own, in one's own life, canceling your responsibilities.
Right. Yeah.
To create the time that's mm-hmm. required to actually go through a full detox and rehabilitation period of time is significant, mm-hmm. but also it's expensive.
Right.
It usually requires insurance if you don't have cash, really long waiting lists. People have had different experiences with it, and what we do mainly is listen, find out what an individual's own experiences have been, what their particular challenges are, what they're most afraid of, what are the roadblocks, what are their goals, what are the things, what are the other problems going on in their life, and we can kind of troubleshoot with someone on an individual basis and figure out mm-hmm. what steps are the best steps to take in that direction. What do you need to do first before you can walk into a treatment center? What needs to happen in what order? And we do work with people at that level. And
And I think this informs the larger policy discussion. And that policy discussion is, we're going to change the dynamic, the model of spending two-thirds of our dollars on law enforcement and a third of our dollars on rehabilitation. How we can switch that equation around so we're spending two-thirds of our money on rehabilitation and treatment and a third on law enforcement. And that's the kind of discussion that you want to have, and that's the kind of discussion that these particular ideas inform. And that's why it's important to always have the discussions, let people know what the landscape of this is, what the reality of it is, and let people make their own informed decision, because it really is going to be the electorate that's going to push the legislature to do these things. It's going to be the people in Santa Cruz that are going to demand that their city council or the people in the county that are going to demand their board of supervisors, you know, turn that model around so that we have more sure. rehabilitation, more opportunity for treatment, and that kind of thing. So unless we have this, you know, foundational, you know, discussion, it's difficult to inform people to the point where they can say, you know what, I think that's a good idea. Let's at least try that. So while in the few minutes we have left, maybe we can just talk for a second about where we're going to go, you think, from here. We have Needle Exchange. Needle Exchange is working. You know, we're still outreaching. You're still doing Narcan. You're still doing all these wonderful public health benefits. Are we going to continue and continue to be strong and continue to be able to provide that service? And in what form, do you think, just very briefly?
Well, I think that a really good thing that's been happening is that our program is working much more closely with the public health department. Mm-hmm. And because they have more resources than we currently have, but also because in our history, in our program's history, we have gone through periods of time when we've had a lot of resources. We sort of know what to do, and we'll be able to get to that point again.
Thank you all for being here. Veronica, Jack, Emily, shootclean.org, if you'd like to get, I'm presuming that's still the website you want to get. It's a tremendous educational and informative website to go and find out more about this very, very important public health issue. I want to thank you all for being here and actually for sharing your experiences and your knowledge and your passion and dedication to our audience, because it is such an important issue that we're engaged upon. So thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Steve.
Yeah.
And that was a community TV show that hasn't yet aired. Of course, you can't see it unless you're sitting in the studio with me, Steve Plaich, and three others, Emily Auger, Jack Bishop, and Veronica Sims, talking about the positive aspects of Needle Exchange. A little dry for me in some respects, but maybe even a little educational. While it was playing, I was kind of reviewing the John Malkin show of about a month ago now, where he had the same Emily Auger and two Needle Exchange researchers on, and I wasn't really able to get too much into it because I was trying to also monitor this show at the same time, but I may be playing some of that on Sunday, which is when I play a longer show. I do a longer show, 9:30 in the morning to 1 in the afternoon. Every Sunday. So you might want to tune in to hear more of that. Also, John Malkin does his own regular show Wednesday The Great Leap Forward. And his show is 7 to 9 on Wednesday evening. Although, I mean, it's not a regular needle exchange show. So if you have any thoughts, questions, comments, complaints, outraged cries, please call in 427-3772. 427-3772 is the call-in number here. And I think the phones are working. I did get an email or two from some of the loyal listeners, and thank you for that. One loyal listener says, you're obviously hostile to all these people you disagree with. Bear in mind, I don't disagree with what you're doing. Just be honest with yourself and us about it. And I'm trying to be honest. You know, I'm also, I have this kind of perverse quality that I try to consider that perhaps I'm wrong at some basic level, and that means maybe this is just basic insecurity rather than a philosophical integrity. But I want to maintain the prospect that the whole situation always needs to be in the process of being reassessed to some extent. Although, you know, we are standing on the ground, we're not standing in the air, there are some things that seem to be true and some things that seem to be false, something's right and something's wrong, and that certainly is the case. And, you know, I'm not really hostile to the people. I like these people, unfortunately. I mean, I even like city council members whose opinions and actions I detest, in the sense that when I start talking to them and there's an interchange, it feels like a human contact. And sometimes, of course, that's an illusion, particularly with politicians. But there was a lot of dialogue going on back and forth between members of and followers of the Take Back Santa Cruz March on Tuesday evening, much more so than at a regular city council meeting. It was much more egalitarian. It was much more free and vigorous. The problem, as I said before, is that it was based on suppositions that were false, in my view, that, you know, there's a big public safety emergency, that there's a big needle emergency, there's a big crime emergency. I mean, I often come to these discussions with the sense that there's a homeless emergency, there's a shelter emergency for homeless people. But I think this is documented. I mean, it's clearly the case. It's just ignored. Whereas those who come with this demand that there be more money thrown at the police department, that there be the homeless lack of services center be cut off of funding, that there be careful scrutinizing of homeless people using the homeless lack of services center for criminal elements. I mean, consider if you did this with housed people, how it would be considered as an incredible violation of people's privacy. People on Social Security or something. I mean, it's, in a way, it seems to be an outrageous demand of special privilege by people who already have some pretty nice privileges living in nice neighborhoods, in nice houses. They want to make it even nicer for themselves by, in essence, kind of gating off and patrolling their communities. And, well, I'll have more to say about this as I go through the tapes of the tape of the dialogue I had with these folks. But again, as I said before, it seems to me the first thing, the most important thing to do, after a very brief sort of survey of a couple of other things, is to let homeless people themselves speak, because they don't get to talk. Or they get to talk, but nobody hears them. So that's more important to me. But a couple things. I did get a response from the city council's Nydia Patina, is that her name? Public records that I requested from Lynn Robinson, Cynthia Matthews, and Pamela Comstock, particularly Lynn Robinson. I don't think the other members were particularly responsive. I haven't looked them over yet. I got 22 public records, essentially about the Homeless Lack of Services Center, or what they call the Homeless Services Center, and what Robinson has been doing and back and forth with Monica Martinez, Don Lane, Board of Directors, what kind of information she's gotten that leads her to the conclusions that, you know, she wants to more carefully scrutinize what's going on out there. You know, it's, in a way, it strikes me as a kind of McCarthyism against the poor, in which you have the you know, the late great Senator Joe McCarthy standing up and ranting about a name of I don't know how many communists he's found in the government. You know, how many criminals can we find at the Homeless Lack of Services Center who have been served here? You know, well, criminals get on Social Security, you know. criminals deserve basic human rights like everybody else. You don't want to enable people in their crimes, but the idea that you're going to start starving people out in order to stop them from committing crimes or deprive them of sleep is ridiculous, as well as being inhumane. I mean, this makes no sense. It's a kind of a frantic response to something that there's an increasing situation that it becomes where people, where there's the crimes, there are crimes that are being committed. There are assaults. There have been several murders. Several. Not hundreds, not scores, not dozens. I don't think there have been more than 10 in the last year. I don't know. And maybe for this community that's a huge number. But you know how many homeless people have died outside? Would you like to see a mob of homeless people marching to your house and demanding to be let in, or demanding to be let into public buildings or the vacant public buildings? I kind of would like to see that happen and see those vacant buildings made useful for once. Of course, when that's done, people like myself who are reporting on it get felony charges, and we get to spend a year in court. And you, and the taxpayer gets to spend tens of thousands of dollars on ridiculous charges that go nowhere, but that are a politically motivated thing, which, by the way, is still the case for four individuals who are going back to court in April, the Santa Cruz 11, the four remaining of the Santa Cruz 11. A quick report, though, on Isaac Collins. Isaac spoke to me today. He went to court with his public defender, Mark Garver, I believe his name is, and he copped a plea, as they say. He pled to a charge of, I think it was possessing hash oil or something that was in the butterscotch and chocolate chips that he was either selling or passing on for the 420 smokeout that happens every year up at UCSC's Great Meadow. And that he was given a suspended sentence of, I guess, no time in jail or maybe time served. It wasn't clear. He got a $240 fine, which he's still trying to raise. He may be on the air on Sunday talking a bit about this. I suggested he make it a big issue. He's not allowed to go up on UCSC campus. He's a criminal now because he did what... I don't know, hundreds if not thousands of people do every year up there and probably every day up there, which is share, ingest, sometimes buy, sometimes sell marijuana. Big deal. Thank you very much. But it is a big deal. It's a nice profitable commercial venture for the courts, for the judges, for the pharmaceutical companies, for the drug testing companies. You know, you've heard it all before, and I've said it all before, so we don't need to say it except when it impacts people's lives, as it has Isaac's, and the fact that he's African-American, black guy, and an activist to boot. He's the only person arrested up there. It should be a major scandal, and there should be massive support. I think that there should be a march up there at 420 in his honor. Maybe I'll just walk up there with a sign on that day. Although I understand last year they tried to stop people from coming in from the outside, the authorities making it difficult to get up there, stopping the bus service and so forth in order to illegitimately stop a public protest. If they want to round up and arrest 1,000 people for smoking marijuana, I would love to see that happen. It would outrage everyone, and it would show the absurdity of it all, which, of course, instead they get to pick people off one by one that are the most vulnerable and use it against people that either they have a personal dislike, they being police officers or authorities of different kinds. Anyway, so that's the story with Isaac. He's got a fine. He's got, I think, a year's probation where he has to submit to searches. It's informal, I suspect, court probation. And he's much relieved that he's not going to have to face felony. It was a felony charge that they originally charged him with. And it's, of course, it's an attempt to terrorize people into doing guilty pleas, not going for a jury trial. Santa Cruz 11 are going for a jury trial, the four of them that remain. I got an email from Sylvia, who's also been posting on Facebook. She's an activist who's been concerned about civil rights deprivations around the Occupy movement. And also she's also a longtime advocate for the rights of people labeled mentally ill. and an opponent of forced treatment, as I understand it. She wrote me about the Together Santa Cruz Declaration and posted some comments online about it. Together Santa Cruz is an organization which has put out a petition, which they, I guess they turned in this thick sheaf of signatures at City Council yesterday. The guy in line behind me, the day before yesterday, Tuesday at the City Council meeting, he stated oral communications, and I probably should read this petition to you, or at least part of it. Just my impression generally is it's a very vague, we don't like what these sort of vigilante groups are doing, and we want more compassion, and we're kind of, you know, with smart solutions, and let's be reasonable. And the problem with this kind of vague response to what is fundamentally Take Back Santa Cruz Clean Team hysteria that has been raised is it doesn't talk about specifics and doesn't go back to real facts. And also for me, even talking about it at all is a way of getting diverted from the issues that I continue to feel are most important and most overlooked, which has to do with basic human rights for people who are poor and outside, basic human rights for renters, for workers, for folks who are in, a check or two away from getting the boot. In spite of the wonderful Obama administration and, the great strides that have been made in dealing with foreclosure fraud, which I don't think have been so great particularly. And I've talked a little bit about that and had other people talking about it on the show, although I'm still very, very limited in my education on that. Anyway, Sylvia was concerned about, she's concerned about she wrote me about the inclusion among undesirables of those with, quote, untreated mental illness. She said, the Together Santa Cruz Declaration has some careful intentions, and the lead paragraph seemed to me another iteration of Take Back Santa Cruz. Shun the undesirables, untreated mental illness, and instill anxiety and fear with the safety meme. I posted something about this in Indy Bay. The words in this declaration blindsided me, and I am being scattershot. It takes me a long time to carefully craft language to set a meaningful tone. And Sylvia is tries to be a very careful speaker and researcher, and I really appreciate the work she does. She does have hard to understand it. Of course, you've got to actually look at the petition, the Together Santa Cruz petition, which I believe is on Santa Cruz Indie Media, or maybe somewhere. I think it's kind of floating around. It's kind of seemed to me a weak-kneed petition, as I said before, that doesn't really get to substantive issues of the human rights voids that we have in this area that need to be addressed, the inequality, income and justice inequality that we have that needs to be addressed. You can see it occasionally. It just flares out at you, like in the case of the guy who was held in 18 days because some Take Back Santa Cruz inspired types, or maybe they were just city council SCPD inspired types who thought this guy was stealing flowers from a memorial. And so he was held for 18 days thanks to Judge Grim Gavel Gallagher. And then 18 days later, we found the receipt that said you did actually buy the flowers. Really hard to believe that they didn't have the receipt sometime in that period of time, and that they're, that the flower vendor didn't know that the guy maybe come forward. He said when he was taken to jail, he had bought the flowers, and instead he was held for 18 days. Nobody's held accountable. There's no restitution for this guy. It's all swept under the rug, although I found the Sentinel story. I'm glad that the Sentinel story came out. I'll be trying to give you some details on Lynn Robinson's, Councilmember Robinson's, correspondence with the Homeless Lack of Services Center Board, and what discoveries she's made that have led her to want to... And now she denies that she wants to necessarily cut funding. She wants to closely scrutinize. The mantra of the Take Back Santa Cruz types around homeless, or some people whom I include Take Back Santa Cruz, is to somehow homeless services enables criminals, drug users, idle poor people, hippies, travelers, and is a form of attraction for bad kinds of people to come to Santa Cruz. The wretched services that the Homeless Lack of Services Center actually does provide, I think, really does no such thing. Now, there are those who told me 2 days ago, in all candor, that one guy who was a radio broadcaster for KSCO, whose name I don't recall, maybe he'll, maybe he's listening in, maybe he'll call in, maybe he'll get back to me later. He insists that he knows 9 people who have told him that this environment in Santa Cruz is one that either lured people here because it was the kind of environment that people would find laid back and comfortable, and it would enable drug use, it would be a free place to sleep. I want to quote him exactly, and I probably should wait until I actually play the dialogue, because I did record it. Hopefully it was properly recorded, and I will do that, I think, on Sunday when I do the longer version of the show. So that's the kind of massive, I think, propaganda campaign that's going on, and it's always gone on. Merchants have said that for years, that, you know, all we have to do is put out the word to the hippie grapevine that this is a horrible place to come to, and people won't come here anymore. And it's true, it drives away people, for sure. And it may actually discourage people from coming here, though it's hard for me to tell because I'm here, I'm not there, and I haven't heard people say, hey, I didn't go to Santa Cruz because I heard they're arresting every third homeless person and spitting on some of the other ones, and that's what you're going to hear also in this tape tonight. Well, actually, you aren't. The guy didn't want to be recorded on that. One individual told me that he had been spat on as he was up at the Mission Street Safeway flying a sign. Another guy stopped in a car, according to his account, and got out and said, get out of town. And he said, no, I have a right to be here. And he picked out his cell phone and said, he called the police and loudly and ostentatiously said, I have a homeless person here who's attacking my car. I want to file a complaint about it. Get down here. In other words, he made a false police report against this homeless person, which I didn't see, which I only have the report of this individual on. So you can take it or leave it as to whether it's true or not. But anyway, let me quickly finish up my report and then get on to the actual voices of people. A guy called Walter Lilly, who's been coming to the, he's a homeless guy, kind of a grubby homeless guy, Walter. I hate to say that if you're listening, but I think it's true. And so what? You know, I'm pretty grubby myself on occasion, but he called me night before last and said he was arrested. And he was arrested for being downtown. He actually wrote me an email about it. He's been given a stay-away order from Pacific Avenue, apparently. For some reason, he wanted to go to jail, he says. So he went to Pacific Avenue, and he just sort of hung out there. And eventually, he was... had an open beer can that he was drinking from. I know, horrendous, open container. Don't do that unless you're paying $5 at a cafe on the sidewalk, and then you can do that. That's fine. Just don't do it yourself. I mean, then you're a criminal, right? Here's what he wrote. He hung out on Pacific Avenue eating with an open beer can. Eventually, a cop came along, and after much polite pushing, got arrested. He was trying to persuade the cop to arrest him. I think he was looking for a place to stay, looking for a place to sleep. Perhaps. I'm not quite sure. Maybe he was trying to make a constitutional point. However, perhaps helped along by the booze permitting an I'm drunk impression to be given, he was held 5-ish hours in the drunk tank. The cop said, you must be drunk. You're not listening to me doing what I told you to. He has a bad foot. He's a diabetic inmate. He was discharged without his bags of books and his blankets and his underwear. At 10:30 in the evening, he actually called me at 11:30 and said what he wondered if I had some blankets. I said no. I wasn't in a position to do that. I did call a few people. They weren't in a position to really help. And I suggested he check out the Santa Cruz Diner, which for some strange reason apparently was closed on Tuesday night. At least that's what he told me. And the telephone, the payphone across the street from the Santa Cruz Diner was vandalized, so he couldn't use that. That's another grievance I have of the those who are pressuring either the telephone company or gas stations to get rid of their payphones are doing a disservice to homeless people, although a lot of homeless people have cell phones now. Some don't, and they need those phones to make connections, and not just drug connections, folks, ordinary connections. He was outside with no blankets on Tuesday night. Wednesday, he went to the winter shelter, so he got in there. He spent all his money, even his handicapped bus fare. The sheriff said that you're not a criminal. He tried to get into the apparently into the jail because he wanted to violate a stay-away order from the downtown. He went to the court requesting a rehearing. The guy's a little kind of all over the place, or at least he describes himself as all over the place. Maybe he's not really all over the place, but has one gets that impression. I told him that the police station, which I thought had extended its hours of picking up seized property, why they have to take your blankets down to the police station, not leave them at the sheriff's, so you can have them when they release you at 3:30 or 10:30 in his case at night. I do not understand. It must be, maybe it's, you know, the sheriff's hasn't, it seems to me the sheriff's probably have a bigger budget than the police department, and they can afford a place to stash that stuff if they're going to start busting people on these bullshit charges, like open container. But they don't. In any case, the police department is, I learned by calling today and passing on the information by email to Walter Lilly, that you can get your property back Tuesdays and Thursdays between 12:30 and 1:30 and between 3:15 and 3:30. And that 1 hour and 15-minute period of time per week, actually it's 2 hours and a half per week, is the only time the police station will let you get access to property they've taken from you that may be survival gear, that is, or medications or IDs, stuff that you need. I had been told, I guess I thought it was within the last year that they'd extended those hours, but the woman who I spoke to at the police station told me no, she'd been around for a year and that wasn't the case. So I was having some fantasy, or she's not well informed. But in any case, that's the story. He was able to get down there and regain his blankets for tonight. And there's still an armory open until second week in April, I think it is. So he'll presumably have a place to go. He had a place to go last night in the rain, I guess, and hopefully tonight he'll have a place to go too. But that's not the case for at least 1,000 people outside in the Santa Cruz area. And that is, you might say, well, you know, they know that. They come to Santa Cruz. Or, yeah, ain't it a shame we don't have the money because we're busy running around, you know, funding extensive pensions for police officers and paying high salaries for bureaucrats and giving big boondoggles to stadium sports arenas. I mean, all these things, of course, tie together. Anyway, that's the story with old Walter. And checking to see if we have anything else. You know, we probably do, but let's hear from some other voices. First, however, a musical break.
Now I sympathize with the homeless when I see him on the evening news. Somewhere there must be a place where they can park their weary shoes. Maybe a camp in the country or a building on the edge of town. But that shelter there across the street is only gonna get me down. Everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health, and we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. See, I don't want to have to lock my door to be inside safe and sound. This neighborhood will go to pot with the likes of them around. It's no fun out there in the cold. Yes, I know just how they feel, but I just can't bear to see a hungry face when I'm eating a nice warm meal. Oh, everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health, and we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. I've got a friend who owns a store about a half a block away. Every year she donates goods and money to United Way, but she thinks it's bad for business to have the homeless walking by. She says, why not send them south for the winter so they can stay warm and dry? Oh, everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health, and we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. Well, now please understand our position. It's not the way it looks. We want them housed, but out of sight. There are zoning laws on the books. Long as we can clear our conscience and preserve our civic pride, we'll give our consent, even pay the rent on a place where they can hide. 'Cause everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health, and we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. Yes, we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else.
All kinds of good stuff. We need to stop Steve's music from hiring and taking people's guitars and reselling them.
Now,
the guy got my new guitar that I just bought. He bought it off of some girl that should have been able to sell it to him.
Stole it from you?
Yeah, and Steve, I think he has more of my guitars that he's selling, and the guy's he's very, very bad for doing that. Yeah. You should learn a lesson and maybe...
Now, where is Steve's guitars located?
Steve's guitars is right by Grog Liquor Store.
Which is?
Right off of...
Pacific Avenue?
Pacific Avenue, right by the ice cream shop. The best ice cream shop in town, but...
Marianne's?
I wanted to support Steve for a long time, you know, because I like to do that for this town, support every company if I can, but... I lost all my faith.
I'm not really sure who he's talking about, and it's not Marianne's, which is on Ocean, but could be Marini's, could be Cold, the Creamery, Cold Stone Creamery. Don't know. However, let's hear more.
Did you tell Steve that you were concerned it was stolen property?
I showed him my guitar before I got stolen, so he knew it was mine.
How long after that was it stolen?
It's been gone for 2 weeks, and luckily I came over there yesterday with my receipt. I gotta wait 90 days though, he's telling me, to get it back, and I'm going crazy without it. I need my music. Well,
at least he got it back.
I'm glad the girl didn't sell it to some truck stop or something.
But you think, well, maybe
Steve should have not have bought it.
He didn't notify you, or he didn't?
No, and he tried to lie and say, he said he called the sheriff's department, he checked with them. I reported it with the sheriff's department. He did not do that. He acts like he has his own private investigator. Investigators don't go after guitars. I can tell you that much. I mean, it's just kind of a funny story, but it's real. And I'm just praying for the guy that he doesn't do that again to somebody.
And we've been talking with
Jeffro Patterson.
Thank you, Jeffro.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
This is my friend.
Any comments?
No, not really.
I don't really know.
No hassles. No hassles downtown. Nothing of that kind.
No, it's been pretty clear. Yeah, for the most part.
That's good.
He does magic. He's really good at it.
Well, sometimes we hard to do that on a tape, but we'll work on that. I'm inside, and the line goes all the way around the room here in the Red Church. We got lots of people. Hey, Raven, any report?
This is a food event every Monday from 5 to 7 for those who are hungry and interested. And by the way, I just did get in touch with Rene Curry, who does a beanies and burritos meal, or used to, on Pacific Avenue in front of what is now Forever 21 every Sunday around noon. She's been gone, out of town, left, went to Salinas, and has been working there with homeless people there. I think it's called Dorothy's Place in the Chinatown area, according to her email. And she also she said a group of people are going to begin resuming this meal in Santa Cruz, presumably perhaps at the same time, I don't know. I would suspect that might be the case, in early April. So keep your eyes peeled for a resumption of the beanies and burritos meal, this time not by Rene, though, but by some other folks.
Yesterday I was passed right by one of the security guards, and went straight to the guy next to me, one of the balloon makers, the one that doesn't wear all the face makeup, and he told him to move along, but not me, and I was like really confused by that. The balloon maker had some people that were, he was making balloons for the kids, and then the father of the kids got a massage from me while the balloons were being made.
Where was this?
Oh, right on the corner of Soquel and Pacific.
I saw you there, actually.
Yeah.
At what time?
Oh, God. Well, it was sometime after 1:30, I don't know. Anyway, when the kids and the father left, I went and asked the balloon maker, what was that all about? Why is he telling you to move and not me? And he's like, he said there's only one spot here. And I'm like, really?
I think there's a rule about panhandlers being 3 feet apart, but nothing about other people.
We were more than 3 feet apart, at least 5 or 10 feet apart. But he was really close to the blue change machine, and I was really close to the stupid imagine orange or red things. And
the panhandler punisher?
Right. And if he had asked me to move away from that thing just because I was close to that thing, I'd have told him, ticket me. I'm not moving.
For those who don't know, the city council has set up a 14-foot forbidden zone around all kinds of unlikely objects and places, all intersections, all buildings and business districts. You have to be 14 feet away from them if you are seated or you are engaged in criminal activity. Also, you have to be 14 feet away from a bench, 14 feet away from a telephone, 14 feet away from a directory sign, 14 feet away from a kiosk, and it goes on and on, severely limiting the number of spaces you can sit down at. Again, an attempt to disperse gatherings of people downtown that merchants don't like. Of course, it's not really used to go after middle-class people usually, or they're usually much more well-behaved in the sense that they can have the money to go and sit inside a sidewalk cafe. They don't want the embarrassment of saying to the police officer, gee, aren't you eliminating constitutional rights at a we thought we all had. What's going on here? And of course, tourists who come to town don't know the terrain anyway, and they're not going to argue. But I haven't seen a lot of middle class tourists being even cautioned by hosts or told they have to move along. It impacts youth, minorities, homeless people, the undesirables in the eyes of a certain wealthier class of people, and a more, frankly, a more bigoted class of people, in my view. The items that Raven, that's the woman who you're listening to, was talking about, she was near the large red parking meter shaped Imagine Real Change, which essentially encourages people to be stingy with panhandlers and put their money in the little red parking meter-like object, which will then be given by those who know better how to deal with homeless people. You don't have to risk your money will be spent on a beer or a shot of heroin or, I don't know, whatever. A wild night on the town, bullets. Who knows what these homeless people are up to. So, let's hear some more from Raven, who's a street spirit vendor, and also a masseuse, who apparently is not being hassled, and good for the police and good for the community that she's not. She's performing a service. But why is Looney Balloony being hassled, if that's who it was? I only know two balloonsters downtown, Mr. Twister and Looney Balloony, and it doesn't sound like Mr. Twister was getting the shaft. Because supposedly he was within... He was within 10 feet of her. These rules they make up, or that they suddenly have the impression that they are entitled to enforce on people, are comical in a way, but not so if you have to face threat of jail, threat of fines, threat of public humiliation, which is what homeless people face every day, and what people who are out there in these public spaces face who aren't homeless, who are coming down simply to use the public spaces in the kind of way which involves performing or performing a service or engaging in political activity.
Hell no, I won't go.
But he didn't ask
the name
me
of the
to
cop
move.
Was?
Oh, it was one of the rent-a-cops, you know, a young security guard guy. Yeah. I didn't catch his name, to be honest.
Any other reports?
No, that's it. I'm going to go try to get some food.
Here, here. Thank you, Raven. Yes, go ahead. Let me get this on tape.
Okay. I'm playing at the beach in Santa Cruz.
Right.
Just laying at the beach. Nothing wrong, not drunk.
There you are.
Not drunk about anything, right?
Right.
Donnell was with me, and the security guard walked up to me and said, we had to get up. I said, why do we have to get up? He said, because you've been laying here for too long.
What?
And I said, but there is nobody around. We're not bothering anybody. He said, no, we've had complaints that you've been here for 4 or 5 hours. You need to get up and move.
Okay.
I said, I don't think we have to move. He said, I had to move or he was going to call the police.
Which one? You should call the police and call the FBI. You know, but again, you know, who knows? But there's no law against being on the beach for a long period.
I said, okay, well, what are you supposed to do when you come to the beach? You know, I know you walk. We already had walk. And so now what do they want me to do? I lay down.
What's your name?
Rhonda Baird.
And Rhonda, when did this happen?
I think it was Wednesday, but ask Donnell. She's outside. She knows.
Now, what time of day?
It was before noon.
How many of you were there?
Just her and I. We were just laying on the beach. That was it. No alcohol.
Where was this beach?
Santa Cruz on Santa Cruz Beach. The wharf would have been on my right side. So we were on the left side of the wharf. Not on Cal, it's the other side.
Well, it's a beach is all I can say.
Yeah. We were not doing anything indecent. We were not breaking any laws. I got up. When I walked off the beach to go sit on a bench, I turned around to read the sign. It said nothing about...
There's nothing there. He probably has been told harass people, and if they don't know that, you say... But on the other hand, you know, who's going to tell you otherwise? That's the problem.
That's the problem, yeah.
Thank you, Rhonda.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Any street reports? In court.
So at court, they ended up dropping my weed charges.
What were your charges again?
Possession of over 2 ounces of marijuana, 2 separate charges.
And your name again is?
Lynn.
Thank you, Lynn.
You're welcome. Also known as Sunny.
And of course, last time we spoke, you were Sunny. And now you're even sunnier.
Still am, because now I don't have to go to court.
And so everything was dropped.
Indeed.
Now, have you been hassled by police since?
No, not yet. I still have to be subjected
subjected to search and seizure for 24 months, which I talked to my attorney, and I was like, you know, that's harassment. That's the whole point, you know, is that they harass me. And I was like, how many months? And he said, 24. And I said, I will take it just to be done.
So this was, you actually did, you did a plea bargain with him?
Yes, and I didn't have to pay any fines or anything, but I still had to plead with them for them to still search me. Still. Dot, dot, dot. 24 months. Here we go.
So what did you plead to? What was the charge you pled to?
My what? I'm sorry.
What did they, what did you find, what did you say you didn't, what was the charge you were, you pled to?
They dropped my battery on an officer to a resisting arrest. And they also, that was it. That's all I got.
Name of the officer?
Clark.
And I think you talked about this before. I want you to talk about it again at some point when you're not.
I still have your card.
Okay. And we've been talking with the infamous Sonny.
Hi.
Thanks, Sonny.
Talk to me again later. I'll tell you.
Review that incident. We're talking with Clive Davies. And Clive, we spoke already about an incident where a rent-a cop came by the main public library in Santa Cruz at 9 o'clock in the evening.
In the morning.
In the morning.
An hour before it's open. And I was sitting there, I was smoking a cigarette and looking at a book. He came by and said, sir, you got to leave because you can't sit here until it opens at 10.
And you said, show me your papers.
No, I just picked my, grabbed my ass and ran.
I hear you. And have you, has that discouraged you from coming back to the library early?
I've had, no, it hasn't happened before. I go there after 10.
So you, it's discouraged you from coming back at 9?
Yeah, I'm a little nervous about it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you. So, and again, we've been talking with
Clive Davies.
Thanks, Clive.
And the library has been made an increasingly hostile zone for homeless people. After protesters were protesting at City Hall and sitting on the benches across the street at the library in the Peace Camp 2010 protests of several years ago, almost 3 years ago now, they removed the benches. They made it illegal to be in the either in the City Hall grounds or the library grounds after 9 or 9:30 over at City Hall. It's a little later, 10 or 10:30. And, of course, more recently I've talked about how the library board has made it illegal to sleep in the library. Even if you're not bothering anyone, just fall asleep in the library is not a crime, but a basis for exclusion from the library. And harassment while you're there, and that apparently, I've been getting reports that people are getting harassed by the security thugs who are walking around in their pretty uniforms. And also now, apparently, the security guards, none of these last three reports you've been heard about on the beach and then downtown for the crime of blowing up balloons, balloon figures too close to a masseuse, a street masseuse, who had no problem with the balloon blower, a balloon worker, who was essentially providing a service for kids. These are security guards and not cops who are, of course, I'll never claim the police are well-trained. They're not. But these security guards seem to be much worse. And in a way, if we had any kind of attorney who was worth their salt who wanted to spend some time on this stuff, it's a perfect opportunity to encourage false arrests by these cops. By these security guards who are... they can make citizen arrests, but, of course, what they're probably going to do is call the police who will then say, forget it, if they have any sense. Though, not necessarily. Again, three instances of security guards overstepping even the written law, which has, you know, even which is bad enough. This, all these forbidden zones for sitting downtown, for smoking downtown, for street performing downtown are bad enough. But when they are simply, these folks in uniforms are exercising their authority to create new and more extensive restrictions and throwing their authority around, it's a natural thing that it happens this way in a time which it becomes a day of national, a month of national mourning for two not particularly remarkable police officers. And I don't say this with any malice, just as a matter of, I think, objective reality. Elizabeth Butler and Lauren Butchie Sticky Fingers Baker, as we used to call him when he was hauled in to the city council scrutiny for, by the accounts of nine women, that he had fondled them, fingered them, or inappropriately searched them back in 1992. the only officer against whom I've ever won a lawsuit for false arrest. Notorious. Butler is less so. But in any case, when you have this hero-worshipping attitude towards the police department that's created and abetted by the Sentinel and by the city council and by homeless people themselves. I mean, who doesn't want to jump on the bandwagon if it seems to be a community reality? Again, the reality has to be more the deeper reality is what are the real what's the real nature of the people involved? What are the real facts in the situation? And you get back to the whole issue of needles and crime waves and so forth when you know, it becomes tempting to argue to stay on the grounds of the fantasy grounds that are being created and stoked that have nothing to do with the real situation, but do serve a political purpose to giving more substance to these sort of essentially fascistic moves. Really, by the way, by fascism I mean vastly expanded police power. Do what you're told or else kind of approaches, short circuits to so that the courts themselves become tools of the police authorities, of bureaucrats, city attorneys, and so forth. And I think this is increasingly happening in Santa Cruz. So there, more from the Red Church interviews from last Monday. Food there 5 to 7 every Monday, and as long as Joel Miller, Father Joel, continues to do it.
Okay, and your first name is Robert Norris. Do you want my car again?
The Robert Norris, yeah.
The, very excited.
Yeah, you're a important guy.
The police, they say the only people I can get to help me prosecute cases of psychological torture is with the mental health professionals to take care of the homeless at the mall.
We'll talk more. I want you to be able to get your meal. But again, we've been talking with, what's your name?
Christine.
Hey, Christine, grab me later. We'll talk some more. This is about a counter rally.
Or talk some less, as the case may be, because Christine was not terribly coherent. I don't think she was drunk. I think she was inarticulate about what she wanted to say, or at least I wasn't able to follow it.
Counter rally.
Let's hear about that.
I heard there was a counter rally that was going to roll at the exact same time. People that realize that the exact same people who did the same type of thing did this in about the 1930s, and they were in Germany.
You're talking about the Take Back Santa Cruz type people.
Absolutely. These people could be equated to the same people who tried to take back Germany about 70, 80 years ago.
I think I remember those people.
Yeah. They're called Nazis, if I recall correctly.
National Socialists, if you don't.
National Socialists.
The Führer's boys.
PC. Let's be PC.
Let's be PU, as the case may be.
PU.
Yeah.
And,
so, do you know when this rally is starting or anything about it?
I heard it's happening at 10 o'clock. That's what I heard.
10 o'clock in the morning on Tuesday?
Yeah. 10 o'clock in the morning on Tuesday.
That's tomorrow. Wow. Hi, any street reports?
And there was no such rally as far as I know. There were only very few people who joined the Take Back Santa Cruz group that was very large. It was, I think, several hundred people is how it was described variously, although I wasn't there. I tried to get out to it. By the time I got there, it had gone to City Hall. By the time I got back to City Hall, it had somewhat diminished. All the speakers had spoken. I guess there were some speakers who were speaking. And all I did was I stood there with a large sign, actually four large signs. I was rotating them about concerns of making homeless people into criminals is not a good way to go. But there was no counter rally that I could see. Either it was Brent Adams who stood up and talked about love and compassion or had signs to that effect. Brent is working on a sanctuary campground. And both Brent and I got some flack on the Sentinel story the next day. The topics, comments following the Sentinel story, which you can check out if you go to the Sentinel website. I wasted a certain amount of time responding to those comments, which I shouldn't do, but hey, I'm only human. Anyway, some more from the Red Church last Monday.
Floyd, you heard about a rally planned for tomorrow?
Yes, Take Back Santa Cruz is supposed to be marching from Harvey West, I believe, in through downtown.
Yeah, starting at 5 o'clock. Actually, interestingly enough, that's when Oral Communications is at City Council, and then there's no evening session, so they're probably going to be just rally without the council being there when they get there. I don't know why they want to do that, but...
And I found out why they wanted to do that, because they had essentially co-opted the city council into their rally. And that's why the city council, or at least Hillary Bryant, the mayor, seems to have shut down the meeting in the evening so that she could instead join the Take Back Santa Cruz rally. And she was there, and Lynn Robinson was there, Cynthia Matthews was there, Micah Posner was there, David Terrazas was there. And Don Lane was there. Their whole gang was there at the... And in a certain sense, they should have been, because it wasn't just a Take Back Santa Cruz rally. There was a lot of people there, and a lot of people wanted to talk to the city council about issues that were important to them. As I said, I think there was a wrong-headed, sort of mythical foundation to the whole thing. But the reality was still, these were citizens, community members, whether citizens or not, although I saw very few Hispanic faces and very few homeless people and very few people of color, but I wasn't counting. Usually I do, or look around for that. Didn't look around on Tuesday evening for that. But people have an opportunity to go back and forth and talk to council members and talk to each other, more important, about these issues. And good for them. And good for organizing that kind of discussion. The problem, of course, is when you do so on the basis of false assumptions, the whole dialogue is skewed far to the right. And that is what, however civil the dialogue, however even vigorous and interesting in a way the dialogue is, where people are just expressing their experiences, their fears, their concerns, sharing information, which is good. It's not bad. It's good. It's all within a limited sort of context, and I'm afraid within a somewhat limited ideology. And I tried to provide an additional aspect of that where I raised issues of wait a minute, but I didn't. I'm afraid that I, as I said afterward, the next day at the Huff meeting I went to, very small Huff meeting, I might say, probably the smallest I've ever been to, or at least one of the smallest. I think I needed to be more outspoken, because if somebody comes up to you and starts arguing about the Jewish question, for example, the thing to do is to start talking about unemployment and police repression and inequality of income and insurance company scams and the real things that are happening in Santa Cruz that are important to everyone, that are really at the core of the real insecurity that we have, not issues created by fringe groups. Or by people, whether they're fringe groups or not, who aren't talking about the real issues. So, I mean, I'm a fringe group. So, I mean, you know, but I try to talk about what I think are real issues, at least for the people I'm concerned about, or the people that I have I'm upset about the denial of civil liberties around, and that I think impacts the rest of us, too. Homeless community, poor people. Ordinary citizens who are suddenly agreeing to all kinds of restrictions on their civil liberties, the most basic, you know, the right to be alive unless Obama says so, unless the next Republican president says so, and unless some CIA advisor says so, and then you're on a list. That's not paranoia. That's admitted policy at the national level. And locally, when you find increasing numbers of public spaces being shut down for fear of crime and drug use, and then you have needle exchange being cut off because of the dangers of needles, which is going to create even more needle problems, you're in the middle of a whirlwind of insanity, which does remind me of police states in other countries. And I don't think that ends the discussion. I think that should start the discussion. Some say that's a Godwin's law. Bring up the Nazis and that's it. It's all over. Not just the Nazis. I mean, there are all kinds of different groups in different countries that, since Germany, that have been doing this. The U.S. has been funding them, actually. Anyway, back to the Red Church in the last 6 minutes we have on this show. If you want to call in, please do, 427-3772. Tip of the hat to Uncle Dennis, who's coming into the studio shortly, who went out of his way I believe it was yesterday to come in and replace the DVD player here, and that would have been, that would enable us to play the kinds of shows you heard earlier about the needle exchange. Thank you to Uncle Dennis. Appreciate it, man. Keep up the good work.
Maybe they do.
Foolish to me. I've also heard rumors of a counter rally.
You know where that's happening?
Right alongside.
Oh, dear. Well, maybe I'll have to pick up my sign and join the rally.
It might be interesting.
Thank you, Boyd. Any comments? Let's get into this. What's your name?
LJ.
And LJ, you say, what's this about six?
New hires in the police department, six rookies hired, and they seem to be making quite a few errors.
Give me an example.
Example is they are looking for someone that we all may know. Due to the fact that the new youngster on the block did not run his name, and the person gave a false name, and he took his word for it. And they are in need of finding this person before the judge gets to the cop, because he's going to lose his job.
Oh, dear. I'm not quite sure I totally understand, but any other examples?
I personally don't. Baltimore was telling me of some examples he went through, so I can't think of any.
No problem, no problem.
It's a lot of change, you know, going on and attacking our camps and, you know, really.
Has the camp been attacked lately?
I'm in a place, I'm not in a camp right now, but everybody I know is, yeah, they're coming down very, very, very hard. So.
I better, this looks like the chief criminal over here. I'm going to talk to him. Yeah. We've been talking with?
LJ.
Thanks, LJ.
Thank you.
Hey. Hello, Robert. Hey, Joel. So you're overseeing a lot of people in line for food. How many do you estimate do you have tonight?
I think it has to be, it's going to be at least 200. So, you know, it's the last of the month and it's good weather. I don't know how to predict this, but.
Any donations from Take Over Santa Cruz? I'm sorry, Take Back Santa Cruz?
Donations?
I don't know, dynamite, lice powder, food perhaps.
Yeah, I heard the council considering cutting back $50,000 at the homeless service center.
Will you be going tomorrow to speak to them at the oral communications at 5 o'clock?
I'm not. This is Holy Week. It's a very busy week for me. So
Easter coming up.
Yeah, right. So, but
well, it's appropriate time to crucify the homeless, don't you think?
Well, they did. That's what Jesus was homeless. No place to lay his head.
Probably a needle user, right? Well, I don't know.
He talked about going through the eye of the needle.
That's neat. He was a sharp character.
Yeah.
We've been talking with?
Father Joel, Calvary Church.
Thanks, Joel.
Thank you.
Any reports from the street over here? To an anonymous person who got a citation, along with many others I've heard of, by the way. You're the third or fourth person who's told me this. What day was this, do you remember? Sometime in the last week, the Elm Street Mission, the parking lot across from Elm Street Mission, the Pergolisi, had some kids who were hacky-sacking, or
only a little
bit of hacky-sacking, and there was about 10 or 12 of them, or?
About 16.
And there were 16 kids, and how many cops showed up, you know? About six, five or six, and everybody got
more than that, eight or nine.
I heard it was even more. I heard there were nine squad cars at one point, but I don't know, five squad cars you counted. And you said you too got a ticket. You're not really interested in talking about your own case or saying who you are,
right.
But you are concerned about that.
Very.
And you will be fighting that ticket in court.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you, man. Hey, what's happening with you, Jeff?
I talked about that issue, that incident, which involved anywhere between 6 and 10 squad cars, 10 and 20 people, some of whom were hacky-sacking in the parking lot across from the Pergolisi and the Elm Street Mission on Elm Street, which a huge police presence in order to give tickets for violating what I call the parking lot panic law, making it illegal to be in a parking lot even if you have a car legally parked there, even if you're sitting in your own car, unless you are parking or retrieving your car and or walking directly through. That's the Coonerty Law. formerly Ryan Coonerty's Bookshop Santa Cruz Protect the Employees Law, that began as an attempt to drive people out of the dark spaces in the parking garages, and then morphed into and expanded into the parking lot panic law. In the studio with me now is that man about free radio, our savior. What's your name? What's your name again?
Put saviors on crosses.
That's coming up. Easter is with us. The bunny will be crucified. It's Uncle Dennis, of course. He's going to be with us for the next
homeless?
3 hours. I'm sorry?
Your suggestion about crucifying the homeless?
That was actually Father Joel's. Actually, no, it was my suggestion. I wasn't really suggesting it. I was making a funny, as we say in the business.
Well...
Yes. I mean, it's happening.
If we crucified the homeless, they'd probably stay away.
Well, they actually have been crucified all the time, and they don't stay away. So I don't know what to say about that. You just don't see much of it. It's a different kind of thing. You ever been to jail lately, Dennis?
You should read up on the Roman practice of crucifixion, Robert.
I'm aware of that. Oh, I know. It's not as painful or drawn out in quite the same way. But it does have an unpleasant and uncomfortable aspect. Anyway, thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm not quite reluctantly going to turn over the mic to Uncle Dennis, who will be boozing it up with you with Old Overcoat. No, Old Guardian, I guess it is. Plus, he'll have some scintillating comments on Earth First updates.
Yes, there will be an Earth First update at 9 o'clock.
And he's... with his PETA pals, his terrorist buddies, who he's supporting.
PETA is not a terrorist group.
Oh, okay. Sorry. What do I know about this?
The Animal Liberation Front, on the other hand, is.
Ah, will you be introducing...
I have no ALF news this week.
You have none of that. All right. Well, then perhaps...
I didn't even get any Sea Shepherd news this week.
You'll have to take it from Uncle Dennis. He's more on top of it than I am, that's for sure.
But so, I do have news about the tree sitting willets. So.
Well, there you are for those. And actually, I was reading about that in the Anderson Valley Advertiser myself, which I recommend to you, Uncle Dennis.
I don't trust the editor.
Bruce Anderson, you don't trust Bruce?
Oh, that's the flaky side.
And, thanks for being with me.
Come
back on Sunday, and Dennis will give you all the details about whatever he'll talk about, or perhaps some of the details anyway. Catch me off air at 423-4833, and I'll talk to you. Thanks.
seas to change just by waving my hand. I can turn anything from old to new. Oh, all the things I want to do the most. Babe, I smile, I'm happy man. Oh, the power's half a cent. Got to keep it.
Definitely having a good time back there in New York. Yeah, at the Lone Star Roadhouse in New York City. Way back in 1999. There's Savoy Brown, Alive and Kicking, the name of the album. I'm Uncle Dennis. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz. We're at a frequency of 101.3 megahertz on your FM dial. We're also on the Wide Weird Web. Go to our webpage at www.freakradio.org and click on the red dot, and you can listen on the air to our live stream out there in the ether air. All right, welcome to From the Cream to the Dregs, a weekly exploration of the music of the 60s and the 70s and beyond. We focus on rock and roll, blues, and psychedelic music. If you want to hear punk, that's another show somewhere else on the dial. Don't know exactly where to find that one, but you could try on Wednesday nights. About as punk as they get. That would be the Santa Cruz Pirate Schmucks. let's see here. Coming up tonight, we've got the Brew of the Week. Not sure I'm going to finish this one. This will be a 2013 classic release of a barley wine style ale from the Stone Brewery entitled Old Guardian. So stay tuned for that. Also, coming up at 9 o'clock, the Earth First Update, and all that means all the environmental news you can use, and we will have an update on